What up, Primers? JC here. Can't get enough of Footy Prime the podcast? Why not head over to Footy Prime's YouTube? Head to youtube.com/footyprime for exclusive video content. Then make your way over to wearefootyprime.com for all things Footy Prime, including our official gear from Admiral and our One Ball Gin from Nickel 9 Distillery. And make sure to follow and subscribe across all platforms, from Twitter to Instagram to Facebook to TikTok. Footy Prime has got you covered for all things footy. Thanks so much for listening, and back to the show.
Live from Eggplant Studios in downtown Toronto, this is Footy Prime the Podcast with Danny Dicchio, Craig Forrest, and James Sharman. Today, we welcome Canadian soccer legend Julian De Guzman. For myself, Jeff Cole, and producer extraordinaire Dan Wong, let's get this party started.
Well, that's disappointing, isn't it? Usually, you know, the banter, the taking the mick, you know, the humor. That was professional. You sound great.
That was because Dunlop was here last week.
That was very plain. That was very un-Jeff-like.
Yeah. Where's the effort?
I brought
the
professional camera, so I feel professional.
Thanks, JC. I'm going to be crushed by this bloody thing, aren't I? Sorry, for those that aren't actually watching this on YouTube, where are we? YouTube.
We're usually on YouTube. Not yeah. This week,
there's a metal sign behind me, courtesy Amsterdam Brewery, by the way, which I love. And it's not attached to the wall, and it's gonna come down at some point and smash me in the head. Just so you know, prepare for it. It's called Bone Shaker. Yeah, that's right. Listen, Wes, you heard the exciting day today. We are welcoming, as you know, a very familiar name in Canadian football circles, a guy that just missed out playing with not just Craig Forrest, but also Danny Dicchio. Just missed out. I mean, your gain, Julian, in fairness. Julian De Guzman, welcome, mate.
Hey, man. Thanks for having me, guys. It's a great pleasure to see you guys again. And this is awesome. This is awesome stuff.
Yeah, well, it's been a while.
It's been a long time, hasn't it? Yeah. I mean, you've walked the proverbial football tightrope for a few years now, you know, various clubs, different roles, and now a brand new role with what will be a brand new team announced last week, 1812 FC Barry, co-owner, president. You'll be entering League One Ontario next season. I know that the goals and the ambitions go even beyond that, but tell us about the vision, and first of all, congratulations.
Thank you. I mean, I've been in talks with Andrew Wilgus for quite some time, and learned about the whole project through conversations with him. And the more we spoke and Zoom calls and over the phone, the more I began to have a liking for this. And at the time, I was like, no chance. Like that doesn't make sense to me. But learning him about his vision and what he's done with the Atlantic City FC and the MPSL, he had the same intentions to do that for a minor league in Ontario. And Barrie was the market that he was focused on. So Barrie, for me, not far from where I'd usually stay whenever I'm in Toronto, which is in Aurora. And then, you know, just seeing what's available out there in terms of almost a naked market that has never been touched and had the high-performance soccer that Barrie Soccer, the Horonier region, wants. So for us to be able to create that, working with Andrew, working with Peter Racco, super excited that we could have these conversations again, and hoping that things turn around that allows us to compete in a 2021 season.
How's it been? Obviously, transitioning from playing and then going into something completely different. I know that it's it can be challenging.
Oh, yeah.
And now you're in sort of the business side of soccer. How has that been for you? Even have you enjoyed that side of the game?
Yeah, I really did. You know, it was a lot of work, I'll tell you that. I mean, I always tell players who are playing, play as long as you can play for it, because, you know, once you go on the other side, it's a different beast. And really and truly did not know what I was getting myself into. But I think due to the passion of the game, that's the one thing that carried me through all the challenges and willing to learn, you know, new things on the other side of the line. So having that experience and the opportunity to do it with the Fury has allowed me now to think about the idea of now doing it in Barrie. So I learned a ton of things, had the great support that walked me through the new stages of life as a GM. It was a great experience. It was a great experience, and I want more of it. So especially being able to give back to the country for soccer in Canada, being able to be involved in the development of the game. I mean, that's been one of my major objectives post-career, and I'm fortunate enough to do it.
yeah, was that always your ambition? You know, obviously playing in Spain, around Europe, Germany, obviously TFC later in your career. Was it always the plan to come back and help the grassroots side of things?
Yeah, well, I mean, initially I came back in 2009, you know, signed with TFC, spent some time there, and that was a whole new chapter in my, not just a career, but my life. First time I was ever homesick, you know, oddly, because I spent so many years in Europe, and you learn now a different type of infrastructure for soccer, and also just seeing what was happening in Canada at that time. And I felt we were still behind, since I left home in 97. You come back in 2009 and you would expect, you know, our own league maybe, or, you know, multiple teams, but we just had not even a handful at the time. And then went back to Europe and then came back to North America in 2015 when I joined the Fury. And at that point, I was prepared to know what to expect, you know, walking into North America, the culture, you know, this the way things are operated here. And that allowed me to really become a part of that club, not just as a player, but as a general manager, and learning more about how the game works on the business side, working with communities and academies, and how to build a professional team in Canada. It's very different than it is in Europe, but a lot of the stuff I learned in Spain and Germany, I mean, there's a lot of things I definitely apply to, you know, my vision and my philosophy of how to grow a team in Canada.
Culturally, we're so far behind Europe as far as the game goes. How do you see that building and moving forward in this country?
And we're seeing a huge change around in the game. I mean, you know, you got guys like Alfonso Davies, who's just absolutely, you know, making a huge name for Canadians, and Jonathan David as well. So, you know, there's a lot of people now are switching on and, you know, becoming hey, we want to be a part of this. And you know, that's the thing for Canadians in terms of soccer. I mean, we've taken our time to get there, and, you know, now we're seeing the CPL as well evolve, and, you know, those are the things that we all wish we had growing up in Canada, and it's finally happening. So, but it definitely takes a lot of those who have been involved in the game abroad to come back home and finally give that knowledge back and that experience to really grow the game and allow the game to develop in the country. So, I mean, lots of work that needs to be done, that's for sure. But I think some of those things, seeing, you know, Canadians holding up trophies and doing well for their clubs, I mean, we certainly enjoy that at all times. So hopefully we could do the same for the national team.
Jules, you speak about, in Barry, it's a blank canvas which you're going to be working with. And I don't know where you're possibly going to be playing next year, but is there kind of plans in place that you're going to have a clubhouse and a main kind of area or stadium linked with the soccer club? Because working with a lot of young players here at TFC, we've had two or three really, really good players from Barry that maybe didn't have the quality to reach our first team, but they still needed that step to go on and maybe go on a little detour and then get to the professional ranks. And I really think it's a great, great idea having this club in Barrie, because I think it's an area that hasn't really been touched. And we're not just talking about Barrie, but we're talking around Georgian Bay, all those kind of places up there where there's one or two special little talents that just need a target to maybe say, look, I want to play for this local club one day, and maybe it's a stepping stone, maybe it's a career for me in the long run. But again, I don't know what the plans are. Maybe you can give us a little bit more insight into that.
Yeah, I mean, this conversation started with you know, Barrie Soccer Club. You know, it's the biggest club in the region. Yeah. And you know, when you look at Rowan Cordell, he's been a big advocate in, you know, raising the standards now to another level where we need a high performance team. You know, we have a good academy soccer club, we have the fields, we have the clubhouses. Now we need to take that next step. And so that's how that conversation between Rowan and Andrew evolved, where, you know, let's create a League One team. And I've, you know, Andrew's done it before, and he wants to be able to do the same thing in Canada. Thinks Canada's a great country, we all know that, but he also sees why hasn't this happened for soccer as well the way it's done in America. Yeah. And so, you know, a lot of the discussions at the time, yeah, you're right. Where do you play out of? And that's the thing. I had the chance to do visit Barrie and see the facilities, and, you know, they have outstanding pitches, and they have a clubhouse there, and those are the necessities we need for facilities for the day to day training.
Yeah.
So working with the Barrie Soccer Club using their facilities, I mean, that's already a grand opportunity. And now where do you play out of? I mean, we already had very positive conversations and with Georgian College. You know, they're allowing. I got to see their fields there. That they don't even have an outdoor soccer team, but there's a soccer pitch out there and at the facility. So, I mean, you know, those are the, I think, conversations that needed to happen, and it hasn't happened. And, you know, now we could talk about high-performance soccer in Barrie and not just having a team, now discovering talents, like you said, and creating that infrastructure and setting for a lot of the youth players out there who have the chance to make that jump and get noticed and take off to bigger clubs. So it's going to be, obviously important for us to keep waving the flag and say, hey, there's a soccer team here, guys. Like, this is your chance. And I think that's what the region absolutely needs. So getting that off the ground and then just creating that opportunity and platform for that level in the Huronia region is definitely necessary. It's wanted. They want it, and we're willing to work on that. So
it's early doors, obviously. You know, you just, you know, announced this. There's so many, you know, places and you know, things to figure out as far as hires and who's running what. But we still don't know what the season will look like next year. We don't know anything right now. This could change tomorrow, right? How hard is it to start planning ahead when you just don't know what that future looks like?
Yeah, I have so much time now to plan. So, I mean, that's all I've been doing. And that's how this all happened. There's lots to plan for and prepare, and you have to be super flexible and prepared for all kinds of scenarios, right? It's hard. It's very hard, you know, not to see a season happen this in the League One for this year. The League One group, they're working relentlessly to, you know, to prepare for 2021 to take off. And but again, it's going to be all the decisions from the hierarchy in terms of, you know, when are we allowed to open doors and allow normal size games of people and people coming to the games as well. Those are a lot of factors that you have to consider. And, you know, for us to be a startup organization in Barrie, tons of conversations. But like you said, what happens if certain doors can't open, or we can't even have access to the field, or having an 11v11? So, but I think it's important for now, as we prepare, let's get our ducks in line. And if that moment does happen, at least we're prepared to step in there and make something happen.
Where was the favorite place that you played as a player?
I would Spain.
Yeah.
I would, when I was in La Coruña.
Why was that?
Well, it was my favorite league growing up as a kid. I was a big Romario fan. So I followed him, followed Barcelona, and then super in love with La Liga, but absolutely did not think I would make that level of soccer. But the moment I got there, I think the lifestyle was something that opened my eyes, because leaving, you know, experiencing Germany for 5 years, seeing how they operate, the culture, very different cultures, but in terms of football, both high level. And just to see how players in Spain operate and just the day-to-day lifestyle. And I mean, siestas were great, you know. I love siestas as well
in Italy.
You know, and like, just stuff like that. But it's a very laid-back lifestyle. But at the same time, I mean, the football was on another level. You know, on one Saturday you're playing against Zidane, the next week you're playing against Ronaldinho and stuff like that. For me, I mean, I could never go back and say, you know, sometimes I have to go back and ask myself, did that even happen, right? Thankfully, I did swap jerseys throughout my career, so to go back to these jerseys. But it was a dream come true to play in La Liga at that level, especially as a Canadian, and never thought it could happen for myself or for anyone. So, but the lifestyle, for sure, it was very appealing.
Amazing experience, obviously, football and the differences. But what were the major differences between training in Germany as opposed to training
Spain.
In Spain?
Weather, I mean.
goes a long way, though, right?
Oh yeah, it does. It goes a long way, but Germany, I still think it's the best scenario for any young player to enter. You know, I'm glad it happened. Bundesliga first, and then La Liga, as opposed to La Liga and then Bundesliga, and for many reasons. And Germany for me is the best environment in terms of like young professionals. And once upon a time, when I was playing there, there wasn't many young players, right? It was all average age, 30, maybe 31. And you had maybe a couple 23-year-olds at most. And they were considered the young players and the young talents. But it has changed now. You see the amount of youth players that come through the club teams and at high levels, and even their national team alone. Like, it's unbelievable how they've operated.
But if you look back on it, Jules, and you say you went to La Liga first and then Germany, and you really look back and that prepared you for La Liga.
Oh yeah.
And I've spoken to players that have played in Germany, guys my age, and they said that it wasn't so much the actual football. It was the way players prepared and looked after themselves. It was way, the Germans were way ahead of anyone else in Europe in preparation, in whether it be physically, athletically, tactically. And you can see all the coaches that have come out of Germany now. And you look at the Bayern Munich coach that has been around for a long, long time as an assistant, but he's been through the whole procedure as well. And I really feel if you look back on it, Jules, that probably set you up for La Liga because you wouldn't have been prepared enough. You would, obviously you had the talent, but you wouldn't have been able to probably excel athletically or physically. You know?
You're absolutely right. I mean, that prepared me to be a proper professional. You know, like the day-to-day it was so serious and discipline. And, you know, you're learning this from young. And the moment you step into La Liga, it's a bit different now. A bit lax, you know, hang back. But the moment you're playing football, it's at another level as well. And Germany, I covered so much ground. Like I was a more of a number eight defensive mid, and that really got me my name in Spain, where they call me the lungs, because I was able to cover so much ground in Spain. But they didn't really, that wasn't a common thing in most of their football. Most of their football is ball movement, you know, being quick to decision making. But in Germany, physically, mentally, that definitely set me up to step on that platform.
I mean, everybody knows about Alfonso, which is great in Canada right now. But there's been a number of Canadians that have gone through that German system.
A ton of them.
And been successful. I mean, Paul Stalteri won the Bundesliga with Werder Bremen, what, in 04 or something?
Yeah. 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 No, Stalteri, McKenna as well. Rob Friend. You know, there's so many of them that played in the Bundesliga. And you see what they've become of, you know, in terms of professionals throughout their entire career. Because that type of culture, I mean, I think it's the best for any youth player to walk into and prepare themselves to see if they could make it or not.
But that era in Spain, though, I mean, that era, maybe even more than now, it was so star-studded.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, obviously, you know, you just missed out on the Messi and Ronaldo kind of era a little bit. But, I mean, back in that era, you know, Ronaldinho, you mentioned there, Rivaldo, Raul. I mean, my God, these are top world-class names.
Yeah.
You know, did you ever sit back when you're playing for La Coruña and think, man, like, am I actually really experiencing this at the moment?
My heart's already racing thinking about it. No, you know, it's incredible. It, just the names that you mentioned, and I used to watch these guys on TV growing up on Soccer Saturday, you know, thinking, you know, these are my heroes, and there you are playing against them and even playing with them, you know. And it was a huge you know, moment in my life to not fail. I don't want to embarrass myself and the country that's like, what am I doing here in the Liga?
You were player of the year.
And that happened, right? And thankfully, right. I didn't understand Spanish when I first went there, because I know the critics and media were just...
That helped you, right?
That helped me not understand it for sure, 100%. Really? 100%. But.
Jules, when we are speaking about younger players, and obviously I keep going back to, I'm working with academy players and young T2 players now that are 18, 19. And obviously yourself and Craig went across to Europe at a young, young age. How different do you feel the experiences now compared to going back 10, 15, 20 years ago, where maybe the Canadian player is looked at in a different way now because of the likes of Jules, because of the likes of you, but more importantly, now Jonathan David, Alfonso Davies, who are playing week in, week out, where you guys were kind of under the radar a little bit, where I bet most Premier League fans didn't even know you were Canadian, Craig. And I bet most La Liga fans didn't even know you were Canadian. You know, maybe even Germany as well. They probably just thought, oh, this kid's a European player, a Dutch guy, whatever it is. So not only that, but also the experience of going across as a young player, not speaking the language. We've spoken about this, about Alfonso Davies. Not having your family there. Having to deal with adversity of not playing. Being a young black player as well in Germany, where there was not a lot of black players in the 90s in the German league. Just a whole multitude of things that you had to deal with. And we're not even talking about being on the field yet.
Yeah.
You know? So I just wanted to ask the experience of how different it is now for a young player, because we have a lot of players, their dream is to go across to Europe. I don't think they understand the difficulties of what you guys dealt with back in the days, and still with the difficulties presently with
Trailblazers in many ways.
And listen, Craig was a role model for me, you know. He, you know, seeing him go overseas and I mean, why, what's going on? No.
Hey, don't interrupt.
And sink 12 beers.
Craig Forrest.
Well, that's not, yeah, that's, I mean, that's also a cool thing, too. But no, you know, seeing a Canadian go to Europe, I mean, the options back then is you go to school or you you play. Was it semi-pro at the time? Was it A-League? Where they had the, you know, Vancouver Lynx and the Impact.
Yeah.
But I mean, that wasn't the professional, you know, idea of my story, like that I was dreaming about at the time, right? I wanted to go to Europe. I seen Canadians do it before, so I was like, I could do it too. But back to your point, the mental side of that has to be well prepared before you could even cross that border. And, yeah. And you know, I look back at some of the things I had to deal with, even prepare my brother who left at age of 12. I mean, you can't have a conversation today with any parent about their son leaving at the age of 12, you know, going to Europe. I mean, those things don't exist anymore. So it is different, and maybe the timing is different, but you guys, like guys like Alfonso Davies and Jonathan David, you know, you could see that they're a different character. You know, they're not your average kid that's in the streets. These guys need this to survive. That's the kind of the mindset, and you know that still exists in the country. It's just a matter of how do you nurture that or correct it, because today now a player could wear a TFC jersey at the age of, you know, 17 and think he's made it.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, and we've seen those type of stories unfold
big time. Yeah.
And and I think a lot of the mentality or the mindset of preparing a youth.
So it's the hunger.
It's the hunger. I mean, this was my everything. I even threatened my brother, if you don't become a pro player, you're dead to me type thing. Like, yeah. You can't say that today. But that was my mindset too. I needed to become pro. And I need to become pro. I don't want to go to school. I don't want the scholarships. And that was the other avenue that my parents were pushing me towards, to get your scholarship and, you know, do your 4 years, all expenses paid, and come back. And it's like, no, I don't want that. I wanted to go overseas, and I've seen it done before through Canadians, and I wanted that opportunity just to go overseas. That was my big dream.
Was there ever a doubt in your mind that wouldn't work out for you, or were you so single-minded that, you know, this must happen and I'm gonna
I was single-minded it must happen, but at the same time, yeah, you'd be scared that it might not happen, right? So but
you realize that when you get older, when you're younger too, you're just, every day is just driven to try to get to where your goals
are.
Less
self-doubt, you just...
Yeah, not as much, but you don't really think of consequences.
There's no pressure. Time. We've spoken about this before. When you're younger, there's no mortgage. There's no wife or kids to deal with.
Well,
you're basically single-mindedly trying to do what you fucking want to do in life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there's no pressures on the outside. So maybe that's the mindset you're talking about. And we speak about Alfonso. He's come from hardship prior to even going to Vancouver.
Well, that's the thing. It's in his blood.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. Like, it's hard to compare. We're going to discover Alfonso Davies in Canada, because, I mean, where was he born? Was he born in Canada, or was he born outside of Canada? And what did he go through growing up, right?
Yeah.
And Jonathan David as well. I mean,
Single parent family.
I mean, these are the things that you'd have to dissect on some of these players' careers. And sometimes when some of these young guys are spoon fed, that's when I start to worry. Like, we shouldn't talk about professional. Mm. Let's too soft.
Look at that too, and that hunger when this South American players, classic, come from poor backgrounds.
Oh, yeah.
They're not only looking after themselves, but they're looking after communities.
Oh yeah, and
the pressures of that. So when we talk about guys going to China for the money, you can understand that.
Yeah,
when it's not just about them, it's their community would see them as selfish if it was just all about them.
Yeah, I mean, would you go? I mean, obviously, when you guys played, I mean, China, for example, wasn't an option necessarily to make ridiculous money. But is that something you guys think you would have considered if the Chinese Super League was then what it is now?
You mean growing up?
Yeah, like just even towards the end of your career. Say you could have made a move to China, for example, money. For, you know, 20 mil.
Well,
you probably would have considered it, right?
That. Remember Southampton, it was 30.
Yeah, but would you have? I mean,
if I was at his age for the amount, I mean, we're talking about crazy money.
Yeah, too. Obscene money.
Obscene, going from 2 million quid or whatever to 20, 30 million pounds a year.
I think end of my career, I would have.
End of your career.
Yeah, but beginning my career, I said before, I've mentioned before, I had the opportunity to go to Japan. But it's like you're a young kid. You want to be in the hustle and bustle of the Premier League or in Europe. That's where you've worked hard from a young age to get to.
Yeah.
And there's no way my dad would have let me have gone to Japan and just kind of fizzled out of the picture of
your
Premier League.
Your dad didn't want you to be the tallest man in Japan?
No. Even for a million. I tell him now, I said, even for a million a year back then, Dad, you wouldn't let me go to
Japan. Then, yeah, that might change the things. Go, hey, Dad, it's 5 million a year.
I still don't
his dad was his agent.
Well, that's, but like you said, like you mentioned a big figure. And it sounds crazy, but I've never done it for the money. I just wanted to play football, you know, in Europe. The money came afterwards. I mean, it, you know, due to the success.
It's gravy almost, right?
Yeah, it's pretty much gravy, yeah. But, I mean it's the passion was the number one thing. Why
I always find it amusing when you came to TFC, the first DP, right, believe, right? Yeah. And, the money, but, I mean, coming from Europe, it wasn't that for you.
Well, at the time, the recession did happen. So I mean,
in Europe,
oh yeah, right. Yeah. It was heavily impacted, and a lot of the club teams and stuff, and the decision came down to some of that as well. And mm-hmm. you know, you're getting now closer to 30, so now you start thinking about money, mm-hmm. like, am I going to be good? Am I going to be okay? Am I going to continue to live this life and provide and all these things? And so those are some of the questions you ask at that stage towards the end of your career. Now, if it was Japan or Saudi Arabia and stuff like that, you know, maybe I'd consider, but you know. To come back home and do that, I mean, like, I was like, wow, that's
no brainer.
That's a no brainer.
Was it always going to be TFC if you're going to come back at that point?
It was only the moment TFC is that it came around 2007. It's like, yeah, I would love to play for these guys one day, mm-hmm. if I came back, you know. And so,
how was it negotiating with Mo?
That's actually it was interesting. I mean, it was interesting.
Let me ask you this. Sorry, I'm going to ask you one, this
now
question.
He's on that side of things.
GM,
president.
Yeah.
Was the rumors true? Was there a case of champagne mentioned? Was that?
Yeah, champagne. I mean, there's a lot
every
of
bar
are...
or club that Jules walked into, there was a crate of champagne, which was the
but he had to pay for it.
Ludicrous rumor that was being spread
it's
around.
It's a great
town.
Rumor. I love it.
Yeah, that's very, very weird. Champagne. If it was wine, maybe different. But
yeah,
but no, it was. It's now that I look at it, it's very interesting how those things unfold. And you start, and I knew kind of the conversations that were happening where I was presented to be a goal scorer. You know,
I remember the first time I interviewed you, you said, "Yeah, they think I'm an attacking player."
Well, in the contract, you get a goal scorer. To score goals. I'm like, I never had this before.
You had a great gold cup, though. That's why, right?
Well, that's I had a good gold cup. I scored a couple goals with the national team, and then at the time, people are thinking this guy can score goals. Meanwhile, in Europe, I rarely score goals. I scored one goal with La Coruña in over 100 games.
It's just not your role. It's not your job.
Not my role, and. But again, you also learn how it works in North America, where you know some of the players you play with are coming out of colleges and they're signing professional for the first time at the age of 23. I'm like, that's curious. 23.
You're a veteran in Europe at 23.
Oh yeah. You should have 100 games plus, and so it was MLS was much different than it was those days. But nevertheless, the opportunity to have played for your hometown as a DP player, I mean. I'd never regret that ever. You know, that's still a dream. But at the same time, I need to be better prepared next time that happens. And that's what I did with Ottawa.
And you walk into TFC and on the coaching staff is Danny Dicchio.
Yeah,
club
man.
Legend.
Club legend.
Learning his coaching stripes at the same time.
It was interesting how things unfolded because Jules mentions it a little bit there. It was kind of the negotiations were very, very weird. Put it that way.
And so Mo did all the negotiations.
He did. He approached me after the Gold Cup 09 in July, and he already had an agent for me too to talk to. You know, so I thought that was awesome. I was like, "Wait, you got an agent as well?"
yeah, of course he does.
Does it sound like Mo?
That was Barry McLean, right?
No, it was Andreas. It was actually a guy from Germany.
Okay.
But no, that was when we started the first conversation, and I still wanted to play in Europe. I thought, you know, there's a couple offers on the table. Let's see where these offers go. And PSV, Benfica, Espanyol, the teams in Spain, they thought I had a European passport. Right. Didn't realize I was a foreigner. And there's a certain amount of spots.
Yeah.
There's only like three spots you're allowed to have for foreigners on the game sheet, and then you could register up to five. So I was one of those guys that took that spot, because normally it's Brazilians and South, you know, the guys from South America or top players, but a Canadian to do that, I was like, well, that's great. But then they didn't realize, they thought I was Dutch or had a Dutch passport because of my brother. So the ones in Spain were tough to kind of go back into, and La Coruña did offer me a contract extension for 5 years, so I had the opportunity to stay in Europe. But at that time, when you see TFC now giving you the best offer on the table, I'm like, okay, now this is actually quite interesting. So then the talk started again in September, they flew me out there, or flew me to Toronto, and we spent about a week, and then, you know, they were able to accommodate more than what I expected or wanted.
How long was you out of Canada for, Jules? Like,
before
had you been away? Yeah.
Since 97.
Since 97.
Yeah.
So almost 13. You really grew up outside of Canada.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. 16. So. I left at 15, went to Holland, didn't make it there, then went back again 16 to France, and that was it.
Could you have got your Dutch passport?
No, I have no ties to Holland. Right. We have no ties. My brother got it because he lived there.
For 5 years or something?
Yeah, for 5 years. Yeah. So he had to give up his Canadian and then take the Dutch. But there was a time towards the end of my contract in La Coruña, I guess they wanted me to get a European passport. And, you know, they were looking at options of meeting a special someone in Portugal, you know.
Yeah. Really?
Get married.
Get married and...
arranged marriage.
But...
sounds a bad thing.
An arranged marriage.
Yeah. Exactly what it could have been. That's great.
You're right, though, yeah. Dispo. When you don't... Like, you live over there for so long about not thinking even that you're Canadian. Like, was in the Premier League, started in 92. I got there in 84. Yeah. So I've been there for 8 years.
Wow.
And they're like, oh, yeah, you're one of the first foreigners to play in the Premier League. And I was like, oh, yeah. Like,
okay. Yeah, there's what, 13 of you, wasn't there?
Had my passport.
That first
yeah,
season?
13, yeah.
That's only 13.
So you don't have a dual? Do you have a British passport? No?
Yeah.
Oh, do you? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, I don't have a French, German, Spanish.
How did you get your work permit?
In where?
Well, in Spain or in
anywhere?
Germany.
Oh, you just I mean, I was a foreigner. I just applied for residence.
Right, so you're just playing as a foreigner.
I was just playing as a foreigner my whole career in Europe.
See, I didn't have that just because of if your grandparents were born.
Born, yeah.
And there's something if you played a number of times your country.
Your national team.
75% of your
net. Is that what it is?
When, if you're going over young, you're not even involved.
Yeah, you're not
most
involved.
Most of us that played on the national team, they're... lines to their career are similar in ways that had nothing to do with the CSA. Mm-hmm. It's usually individuals or parents that are helping you take that step and needing that to get there in the first place.
Yeah.
It's really no help at all.
It was my birthday money that I've collected since I was a kid that got my plane ticket to Europe. Yeah. You know?
Right. That's, right.
and then you go to Europe and see what happens, right? Yeah. And it's scary actually just thinking about that.
Yeah, think about your kids now. You're sending them over at such a young age. I mean,
I'm not sending my kids anywhere, man. They're staying here in Canada.
Right?
At the moment, especially.
Do you ever say to your parents, what the hell are you thinking?
Yeah,
Jesus.
No.
I'm like a child.
No, it was too much fun.
Yeah, not too many regrets, I bet.
No. It's but even I got my boy, my son, my 12-year-old who's playing right now. I mean, just watching him growing up in the German system is like, that could only happen if you were born in there. You know, I it's very hard for me to see today, you know, my daughter who, you know, or my son in Canada, send them out to Europe on their own. Like, nah, I don't think so.
Yeah. I mean, by the time we were 20, you felt like you're...
Your generation has changed.
It certainly has.
It's not that they've become softer kids these days, and I hated when older people used to say that about us when we were younger.
Yeah.
But I just feel that we've mollycoddled our children in protecting them a lot more than what our parents did when we were younger. I was on the street playing, or I was like,
generational. Yeah.
When dinner was
ready. You had your Gola boots on?
Yeah, my Gola boots on. I was being a little toe rag around the estate, wherever I was. I was just being a kid. Yeah.
But our parents come in kind of post-war as well, right? You know, they're a little bit young to remember much about the war in most cases, right? But they're post-war. It's a harder society. I think they grew up in, right? And as such, we're a little bit harder than perhaps our kids are now. Because, I mean, I'll protect my kid.
She
can't do anything without me, you know, hovering around her. Poor kid.
She's only got like a couple of years. Going to kick her out, so you better prepare for that.
She'll be in the factory. She'll be in the factory working.
Jules, so going back to, you said Romario was your favorite player.
Growing up,
okay, so now looking at present football and seeing all the players playing in various positions and how the game's progressed even more, who's your favorite player currently in your position?
In my position?
Yeah.
Currently, man.
That you have respect for and you go, I used to do that role and this guy does that very, very well, or does it similar to me or better than me, or just I just
but
like
my this. it's changed now that my position there's no more 5'6", 5'7" defensive midfielders who are just bashing players and chasing. It's a bit different. Towards the end of my career, actually, I remember with the national team, Benito, he would not play me that position because he said it. My number six needs to be tall and be able to also play center back, and so. Those are the you could see that happening throughout Europe, like bigger, holding midfielders, Busquets,
in some ways, right?
Exactly. And I would have been more of a box to box guy, but back to your point, I mean, my role model in that position was Claude Makélélé. During my career, and when I went to Marseille in 97, you know, one of my tasks was to, as a ball boy, you know, watch Claude Makélélé because he was at Marseille at the time. And then he takes off to Celta Vigo, and you know, I watched him from there. And then I go to Spain, and when they went to Spain, that was the name of the role.
You're playing the Makélélé. He's like the one guy, maybe ever, that has a position named after him.
After him, which is right. It's phenomenal. Right?
Thomas Gravesen was close. Right, but you know what I mean? I mean, he came just after Makélélé, right, Gravesen? And for a year there, I think Real signed him for an obscene amount of money to replace Makélélé, I think, didn't
they? Yeah, they wanted that kind of player, but it's not that. He's not that.
No, it wasn't Makélélé.
It's interesting that Liverpool have two very unsimilar players playing in that role now in Fabinho and Thiago, who I really like.
Well, Thiago, you know what? Today, Thiago's my guy.
Yeah.
Thiago's my guy.
He's one of my favorite players.
And why is that? Because I think only people that really understand the game and play the game can really thoroughly appreciate Thiago. I can watch and say, this guy's a really good player. I like him, but I don't understand the game deeply enough to really appreciate what he does. What is it about Thiago that you like so much?
I like, obviously, I've always spoken about players that have game intelligence, and this guy is two steps ahead of everyone else. He's always involved with the play, even if he's not involved with the play. I can't describe that.
Like, enough. Space somehow finds him.
Yeah, he's got
he knows that
the ball movement.
It's incredible, and where he puts himself, and then how he executes. You know, the way he's just so graceful on the ball, and he looks so chill, like his father, Mazinho, who's, you know, they played similar type of footballers. But seeing Thiago do that today in modern day football, and like you said, his intelligence, it's also on another level. Like, I mean, that's something I appreciate in football today, like the intelligence. I mean, we're seeing a lot of, you know, physical players, fast and strong, and that's great also to see. But when you see Thiago, and I would love to see how it happens when he's in Liverpool.
Yeah.
To see how that unfolds, because he did it in Spain, he did it in Germany, and if he could pull that off again, I mean, I don't see why not, because he's in the perfect environment to even become better, which is scary.
You got the big transfer fee, strangely enough.
It shows you how Brazil produce players as well, because they've got Thiago, and then you've got like the big ball, which is Fabinho, who's the big profile, 6'2", whatever he is.
He's like, centre back playing midfield.
He's like a freaking wardrobe, you know. But like, he's got a nice touch in him. He's that engine up and down. So they kind of really bounce off each other. I don't know if you can play them both at the same time. That would be interesting.
Well, I mean, last week Fabinho was at centre half, right?
Yeah,
and so it's different position.
Jules was saying, they're looking for that profile now. When your centre back gets injured, or you want to revert to a back three, Fabinho can slip in there. I still think Thiago could slip in there because he can play as that sweeper in between the two centre backs, because he's clever enough. But it's interesting how it's morphed into a different role now, apart from the Makélélé role that we always used to know.
That's it.
Are those players, are they born though? Can you coach that, or is it just you have it or you don't have it? I'm assuming it's the latter, because there aren't many guys like that around.
Well, I think of a guy like Brendan Dunlop, you couldn't. No matter what you invested in that guy, it's not happening.
All the gear, no idea.
Yeah.
So cool.
It's interesting. Like watching McKelley as a kid, and that was my education at the time. You know, you get to watch players like that. If it's not McKelley, then it's Peter Luxon that follows, right? Yeah. Like that was my day to day as a teenager.
I think that's a problem today, is that I don't think kids watch enough.
No, they don't.
You learn so highlights. Much from watching.
Oh, yeah.
They play FIFA. They don't watch FIFA.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But there's things that happen before you get on the field, which is the things like watching, because we train at the same training grounds with the first team at Marseille, and you would see the first team players walking in their kits and all that stuff, and you're just looking at that like, man, I want to be exactly like that, you know? Mm-hmm. And being able to witness that every day, like the behind the scenes, I mean, that's part of the development. Today, you could just flip on a highlight reel and you're just going to look at moves and that's it. But there's a lot more that comes with that than just a couple highlights, right? And some of my role as a GM where I got to do my research, and they'll send the nice tapes and the, you know, the great plays. But what about the mistakes and who, you know, who you're married to? And when, you know, what's your track record, you know, wherever you've been.
Like, you need the psychological profile as much as the professional athletic profile, right?
Totally.
Full package.
Yeah.
So
was there a league that you wish you had tried?
I wish I tried the Prem. But funny enough, I had Tottenham offered me at the same time as La Coruña, and I chose La Coruña because no Canadian has ever done it, but as well as it was my favorite league in the world. And then the names that were coming out of that league at that time, it's like, I have to see these guys.
Yeah.
If I'm on the bench and don't make the 18, I just want to watch these guys play.
You're marking Zidane, but you could be marking Dicchio, so give me a choice.
I know where I would have gone.
No, but I guess I lived it through my brother. His experience at Swansea, I mean, it was great to see that, you know. And then, I mean, that's a league that the entire world knows, you know, and just to have a family member play there and win trophies and then play in a very good team at the time was also kind of my experience and a little bit of it of living that, of what it's like to be in the Prem. So, but I would have loved to definitely, if I could, to turn back the time, and if there was an offer after La Coruña and going to UK, there was actually, I think it was Wigan that were interested at the time, but
that was a good Wigan then too.
Yeah,
right.
It was with the Spanish coach. He was
Roberto Martinez.
At the time, yeah.
Good team.
So, but
Martinez, they called him.
Martinez.
The English, Martinez.
Martinez.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
How did you like him? He was a good coach.
He was a good coach. Yeah. He was a good coach, and
he's with Belgium now. So.
Yeah, that's right. Well.
Didn't work out at Everton so much. Oh well. No big deal.
You're around long enough.
Your brother's in Germany still, right?
Free agent.
He's a free agent? Is he really?
Free agent, yeah.
Really?
Free agent, not yet.
Huh.
Yeah.
I remember.
How old is he now?
32.
I don't want to hear this. Is he really?
32.
Oh, 32.
Wait.
Jesus.
Yeah, 32.
I feel so old.
No, 31 actually, going 32.
That whole time when I was interviewing you guys, you know, and you were giving us hints, I think Jonathan, you might be putting the old Maple Leaf on. And like, Twitter explodes, you know, oh, yeah, I've got a scoop here. And
oh, man.
Didn't happen. Was that tough for you? I mean, you're dealing with it from both angles, right? Both sides continuously.
It's crazy thinking about that. Like, I was like, why did you put me through that, man? But,
no, you're dead to me again.
You're on strike two.
You got one left. One left, son.
Nah, he's good, man. That's my brother. I mean, it's tough. It was our dream, obviously. We've always wanted to play with each other.
Yeah.
And I think the only time we did it was in a charity match.
I was there. I played in it.
Yeah, that's right. You
probably don't remember me so much.
Birch Mountain. Heavens.
Yeah.
Birch Mountain. I did. Of course I did. You don't need to ask that question.
But it was tough. I mean, my wish was for him to play for Canada one day, and he wanted to play for Canada. But at the same time, young at 12 years old, and I mean, this is no word of a lie. At the age of like 7, he already has Holland jerseys in his room, and he has a Dutch dictionary. So he loved the Dutch football, and that's because we grew up on Vilcover, those training tapes that they had, and it was all about Dutch football at the time.
Curva,
yeah. So we grew up on that, and we're watching now some of the highlights of Dutch league and Dutch football, and then seeing like even a young Ajax team win it, and then in the Euros, like all those young players. He's like, I want to play for Holland one day, and it's like, okay, we'll see. Let's get to work. And you fast forward to the time when I was hoping for him to come to Canada, and then he had the chance to play for Holland. I was like, you know what? You follow your dreams, man. You know, you live once. Follow your dreams. And playing for Holland was a decision you made. And
a World Cup, I mean.
And a World Cup. And I went to that World Cup to watch it, and I was like, wow. He said he was going to, he wanted to do it, and he did it. He did it. So, I mean, yeah. It's a huge story and stuff.
Was there any fight back or pushback from the Dutch knowing that he was Canadian background? Or did they, I mean, at the end of the day, they're not going to care if he performs, I suppose, but was there some challenges there?
I mean, I guess, well, he did play for Holland in the Olympics. So it was already a process for him to play for Holland from the time he was.
Right. So it got to a stage where they just saw him as Dutch.
Yeah. Like, right. Yeah. They would call him the Dutch, you know.
Right.
The Dutch player.
Well, he was at the time fluent in the language.
He was fluent, and he went to school there.
Right.
You know, first car for, you know, lost his virginity, everything. Like, it's.
Where would he spend when he finally done? Where is he going to live?
I really see him living in Holland. I mean, yeah. He's got his kids there. He's happy. His son's playing in the same academy he grew up in. Just to watch that unfold for him, I mean, I'm sure it draws tears to his eye, man, because, like, that's a trip to see where you started, and now you got your little one there, and his guy is 13, I want to say, and he's been there for almost, it's his eighth year.
Wow.
With the academy. So he's been doing that year to year already. It's already in him, right? So
yeah.
What academy is that, Jules? That he's with?
Feyenoord.
Oh, he was at Feyenoord as well.
Yeah, at 12, yeah. At 12. And so it's becoming serious now, and I know my brother wants to be close to that. And which is a trip to see, but I could see it. And home for him is brought. I mean, he comes back to Canada for a couple of weeks to visit family, obviously, and he throws camps. You know, and he loves doing that stuff. But I see him spending a lot of time in Holland post career. To be honest,
but not too many kids in Scarborough, like, you know, going through the '90s watching Dutch football and studying Dutch coaching journals. Right, where did that come from originally?
It's weird. Well, my dad initially he was trying to train me and make me a better player. And then by the time I hit 13. I would say that's when I took it to the next level, where I said, you know what, I'm going to really push myself now. I'm throwing all the eggs in the basket. And at that point, I was already now training my brother. So we would train literally every day. And we pretty much had our own periodization where we're going to train, and then we're going to watch the reruns of Serie A that we taped on Telelatino at the time, and watch games and just kind of press pause. What's Seedorf going to do next? You know, just I was talking to a six-year-old like that.
That's good.
Every day. Yeah. And, you know, if it's not watching, you know, clips on them are playing in the basement, kicking around, and we would literally train every day. Our summer holidays, while our friends are having fun in movies and hanging out, we would train three times a day. And sometimes we would make sure we're on the streets with our shoes barefoot, because we read those stories and on up and coming talents from Africa or South America. That's what they had to go through to make it. So we had to kind of imitate that lifestyle and just prepare ourselves. If we really want to, if you want to play for the Dutch national team or go to Europe, we got to take care of business right now. So, a lot of that was on my shoulders because I needed to make
it's
it.
Amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's crazy.
I'm crazy.
Yeah,
I am crazy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, for most people, you go, like, hold on a minute.
Yeah, exactly.
Did you play for any like youth clubs?
Yeah, North Scarborough, yeah.
Yeah. To a certain age, or did your brother play for them at a young age?
He played for them as well, and then we made sure he played years up as well. He needed to play.
Yeah.
So he played for different clubs as well. Played in the Spanish league at Driftwood.
Yeah, very good.
I think that's one of the best places in here to refine your touch and technique.
Any parent, if you feel you have a kid that loves football,
oh yeah,
or you feel has an underlying talent, put them in the Driftwood league.
Oh yeah.
We TFC are doing a lot of our scouting.
What's it called? The Driftwood?
Driftwood league. Yeah. And Jane Finch,
yeah.
It's a like Spanish league. Well, I wouldn't say a Spanish, a Latino league. They have Brazilian academies in there.
Yeah.
Portuguese.
Chileans.
Spanish, Chilean. But the standard is unbelievable. And it's futsal. It's a futsal league. But for me, that's the best game to develop at a younger age.
Oh, yeah.
Especially here in Canada, where we're fucking under a freeze alert for 6 months of the year.
Yeah.
You can go inside and you will see an exceptional.
Is Ronaldinho a futsal guy first?
Well, those guys were
street guys. And that's what it was. The futsal was kind of like a street style, freestyle soccer type thing.
Yeah.
And the atmosphere was so cool. Yeah. Like the parents were so into it, and they're passionate. But to see us, you know, be 6 years old and the moment you score a goal, the whole gym erupts. Like, yeah. It's like, yeah, it's like, wow. It's really
cool. And they encourage the individual skills. Oh, yeah. They try, you try and beat that guy. Yeah. Do some stupid stuff. Try.
As exactly.
Opposed to being
be free.
Shut down. Don't do that because, you know, send it into the box instead.
Oh, yeah. Right? And
which is sadly what maybe less so now, but certainly for a long time, right? Oh, in Canada, certainly. Oh, yeah. In Europe.
And now it's, and that's the thing that we had to create our own, you know, plan to make this work, where now that we spent our weekends at Driftwood and then hop back to on the car into at the Clare Lee, play at a Clare Lee for you know a weekend league as well, and then
indoor
as well,
boards.
Yeah, and while we're out doing that, we've preset our VCR to record the soccer Saturday.
Nowadays obsessed.
We come back home.
Degree.
We're watching soccer Saturday now. You know, Graham Leggett, and we're just catching up on. Oh, look at that game. They had this game of the week. It's in Spain. We get to watch Atletico Madrid against Real Madrid. Just maybe 20 minutes max is what you're getting. So
kids, let me say kids nowadays. I hate to say that because I sound so fucking old. But I am fucking old. But, I mean, are they as obsessed? They've got so many things to do now, so many distractions.
Yeah.
You know, they're putting other sports. Are there still those kids in Scarborough who are, like, living and breathing every second of their life, football? I hope so.
And I think there is. I just got to find it. But it's so hard to identify, too, because it's hard for those kids to walk into academy environments and, you know, be themselves, pay the fees. Like, those are hard things to work
expenses
with, right?
Expenses and
you know,
stuff
there's
like
just too many things now that you have to, you know, take care of before the kid could get onto the field.
There's too many roadblocks. And as you said, you played for multiple teams growing up. I
you
did as well.
Yeah.
I played for four or five teams growing up. You can't do that now. Mm-mm. Whether it be OSA rules, whether it be CSA rules, whether it be club rules, whether it be a sport. Like, my oldest boy had to give up playing football because he was into baseball as well. His baseball team wanted him to train four times a week.
Yeah.
It was like, you're making that decision at 13. Like,
is he dead to you now? Like,
I don't know who you're talking about. But no, it's a roadblock, which I think we're actually harming the development of younger players. Yeah. Give them the opportunity to go and play with their friends in school. Give them the opportunity to go and play with a local team, whether it be in Scarborough, Brampton, Etobicoke, wherever it is. And then have a youth team that he plays with at the weekend. I mean, I went to Clairefontaine in France, which is probably one of the best youth development centres in the whole world. They train their players. They've been scouted. They train their players there all week, but then they go home to play with their youth teams at the weekend, and they watch these youth team games. They watch certain stuff, and they'll have games with their teams at Clairefontaine once every 2 weeks, but it's part of their development, and I really like that because it keeps the culture within these kids loving the sport as well. Instead, we're just
where they
hammering
came from, right?
Stuff.
Yeah.
I just think, you know, from a financial point of view, I mean, very difficult now, especially in North America. I was reading a great article that Stephen Hart actually sent me from the States. I think I sent it to you guys, just about how if you don't have money and resources, you're not getting to the academies to get yourself to those levels. And most of the communities are white. It's a very white sport in the States because you're not giving opportunities.
In the States, I would say, here in Canada, in Toronto, I wouldn't agree with that.
You would think
depends where in the States, too.
Yeah.
Right. But you think that the opportunity is there for?
Well, I look at soccer here in Toronto, and when I go and watch games, I think it's very eclectic. There's a huge mix.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Players playing, and I know we're in a different community here in Toronto. We're very lucky. It's very multicultural. I'm not sure if it's the same in Vancouver where you come from, Craig, or I'm assuming it's the same in Montreal where there's a big Haitian background. I look at their youth teams and they have some fantastic players from either African descent, Haitian descent, Algerian, Tunisian, French.
Yeah.
So I think we need to really, really push that even more because the culture is already within them. And now we need to nurture that and also help our Canadian players that are obviously... And these boys are all born here. Just because you're black, white, Hispanic, doesn't mean you're not Canadian.
Yeah.
So we need to nurture that and help it develop our players here even more.
Yeah, it's definitely different in Canada from that standpoint, but it's still when you're trying to get to certain levels and make certain like academies are expensive.
Oh, yeah. Very.
It's a business at the end of the day.
And I wouldn't know how... My parents would be able to afford that if that was the case growing up. I mean, we had fees to pay, but where they you know, at such a crazy price, like for some of the academies I hear about, I'm like, wow, like that's
No, they were nowhere near growing up. You're basically paying for your, I think it was like for referees' fees for the year.
Yeah.
Your two jerseys or short, whatever you got, your backpack. It was like £100 per year that we was paying. It wasn't extortionate. And the coaching was all volunteer coaching, whether it be dads or friends of parents that played the game at a decent level. But again, that's different in Europe because we have such a high demand of guys or people that women that want to be involved with the game. Here it's a little bit different because it's still a new sport in my, I know you guys have been here a long time.
Yeah.
It's a new sport, newish sport.
Yeah.
That we're still
so a lot of the coaches are still the same. They're volunteers, but they have no idea.
At grassroots level, yeah.
Like,
for sure.
They're like throwing a binder and this is how you're going to coach.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's you're right. Cause then that's the thing. We were fortunate enough to also have good coaches growing up. You know, at North Scarborough, we had very disciplined gentleman who was a father figure to a lot of the guys who didn't have fathers, you know, and he was awesome on that side. And then tactically, he was very good as a coach on the field and sent a lot of players out to scholarships. So, I mean, to have that as, you know, growing up as a kid, huge, you know, and also to have, you know, a very strict program like myself and my brother did for ourselves growing up. I mean, those are a lot of the things you would love to work with. And back to like your point where you're playing for multiple clubs. I remember the story. My brother played for, I think, more than three clubs and got suspended, you know, at the age of 10. You know, so, like, stuff like that makes you scratch your head and, like, how is this guy going to, you know, make it to Europe? And that's always been my my objective, and I made sure that it had to go through me. So going to Europe was the big step, and you had to be very creative those days, very creative. Now it seems like it's laid out for you, you know, put your kid in this program. You pray that he has good coaches, you know, you're getting your return on
it's
your
It's less
investment.
Organic, right? But there's more of a pathway now.
More pathway,
slowly
yeah.
now. And then with CPL, that's one more step, right?
Exactly, exactly.
I mean, you mentioned earlier in the chat today how, you know, when you were coming through, there wasn't a domestic league, you know. And how important is it, do you think, now that the CPL has arrived?
Oh, it's huge. I wish we had this growing up. You know, you could watch, you know, your local club or teams in the country and say I want to become professional one day at that level, but never had that growing up, and it's hard too because you know you even have the you know MLS teams such as TFC Vancouver and Montreal. I mean the amount of Canadians that have had the chance to play in these teams and then play for you know World Cup teams or Canada. That's the things that we've struggled with our country for so many years is getting yourself in club teams, getting those games in, and we just never had that in our own backyard. So now we have it today, and it's huge. It's great, and you know it makes it better for our national team to now work with and find more talent, which is probably the most talented era for Canadian soccer at this moment.
Mm-hmm.
You were still playing a year ago, right?
Where on the Tuesday nights leagues?
You player manager type thing, weren't you, for a while there in Ottawa? Do you think could you still play at a decent level now? You look fit. I mean, most guys a year out of retirement look terrible.
Honestly,
you look fit.
If you. I mean, I played Tuesday nights.
Yeah.
yeah. No,
and I've gotten injured. And I've gotten injured.
Clearly.
And I've gotten injured. Yeah. I've gotten injured. So I'm like, you know, I do not miss getting injured. That's one thing.
That's true.
That's the big. The what I find now, because I'm on the field a lot, even with our guys, 18, 19 year olds, and you still think you can keep up. And then it's a sudden movement. And you go, oh.
Yep.
So the mind. Thinks you can do it, but the body just shuts you down straight away.
Yeah,
I get that going to bed most nights.
and the Tuesday is supposed to be a kick around, and my problem is I'm so competitive. Like, I'm probably the
that
only
doesn't go right.
It doesn't go. I'm still swearing on the field. I'm still kicking water bottles on the side and scaring these guys. And I have to apologize. I said honestly, I'm very sorry, man. Like it's just in me to.
You're fighting not only. Yourself, but you're competing against the other team, but you're competing against yourself.
And then next, you know, my calf muscle blows. I'm like, okay, now this is.
can't do it.
I can't do it. Yeah. I'm out.
Craig's shaking his head, remembering him when he had to retire. It was time.
I think the last game, and we played in a charity game a couple
That's
years
right,
ago.
Birchman, yeah.
Oh, wow.
D-Row.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Were you there?
The D-Row one?
I
did the D-Row one at BMO.
At BMO.
Yeah. That was a few years ago.
Yeah.
But you had another one. I didn't know that.
He has one a year, Thero.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
I never got the call up.
It was for that tournament. What's it called?
Yeah, I was there too. It was, what was it?
Did you hurt yourself?
I can't remember,
Craig,
but I'm assuming.
He played well that day.
Oh, did he?
Really?
I was playing against him.
He
was trying
to play.
It was Dunlop. I mean, Dunlop had a couple breakaways.
So he kicked it into the stands, obviously.
Well, no, it was just, it was amazing. It was like, he was running in quicksand. And he's approaching me very slowly.
You could read him.
And he tried to round me.
Yeah.
It's like, nah.
Do you always play goal when you're playing in exhibitions now? I've never seen you play out, but I know you probably enjoy playing out.
I used to play out.
Yeah.
I used to like it. But that's when I had some lungs.
Some legs.
You know, some legs. And
do you enjoy,
you know what? Yesterday I went for a 10-minute run.
Good lad.
I was fucking
How long was it supposed
shattered.
To be?
Everything hurt.
Where'd you go? Like around the streets, around the block?
He went for
milk?
A 10-minute run in 2 minutes.
Yeah, just down a trail.
I
was going to pick up my pizza. I was 10 minutes late. So I figured, you know what? I got put on a little 10 minutes here.
When you got there, you asked them if you got it free.
Well, I literally, when I got there, I had to sit outside for 10 minutes because I couldn't breathe. I didn't want to go in and go, okay, what do I owe you?
You guys are doing pretty well for yourselves. I got a text from my mate actually yesterday, just this is out of the blue here. What was it? And this won't surprise you, anyone. Where is it? My mate Nige. Neville Southall is a fat bastard nowadays.
That's all it was.
Just Neville South. A lot of ex-athletes, ex-professionals let themselves go 100%.
Oh, Neville Southall.
We haven't done that yet.
Is he Schneider? Wesley Schneider?
Is he put the weight on too?
Check him out.
Already?
Really? Yeah. You got it right after, yeah. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, big time.
No,
eating
really.
Cushions.
It'll be like Hazard and Retires. The same thing.
I thought I was going to get fat after my...
Really?
Yeah. I just didn't have time to because I went right into the GM, so that...
With the stress of it as well.
Oh, yeah.
I think what's the biggest thing
Jesus,
now...
Jesus, you're not kidding, are you?
Right, yeah.
Is that when we're playing, people don't understand. You could basically eat what you want, and you're burning it off every day in training. I'm not talking about what you want in like pizza, hamburgers every day, but you're basically training for 90 minutes each day as well as doing your gym work. You're burning off a lot. But as soon as you kind of finish playing, if you stay on that diet, you really have to adjust.
Now imagine doing that for 46 years. Eating what you want and not exercising. That's like most people.
Yeah, it's true. That's
right?
What it is.
I'm not making fun of Schneider or Southall. I get it, man, because you are disciplined your whole career. Right,
yeah,
and
you wanna,
you can and cannot.
Well,
do.
You've been told,
yeah,
year in since you're a little kid that you're
what
this
hell?
Is when you show up to train,
yeah.
This is how you do it, this is how hard you run. And then some guys get the is like, get up this morning and nobody's telling
it's,
me what to
like,
do. I'm gonna
exactly.
have a freaking pizza,
and we're not
a couple egg McMuffins.
Yeah. And we're speaking about conditioning, like physical side, we're not even speaking about the mental side of things,
yeah.
of not being in a locker room, being with your fellow teammates, whether you liked them or not, bantering.
Mm-hmm.
Being on schedule at a training ground, as you said, Craig, that's all gone. And certain players react to that in a different way as well. They drive to alcohol, drugs, gambling, all kinds of stuff that really affect you in a different way. And then suddenly you're like 100 pounds overweight or whatever it is, and you think, fuck, my life's going downhill.
Yeah.
200 pounds. I've got no friends. I've got no. No
Jesus Christ, Dicky.
Wong is going, yeah, that's
dark,
about
yeah,
right.
Exactly.
I tell you, man.
That's the forest trifecta.
Yeah, mate.
He's not 100 okay. pounds overweight.
Oh, there's
he?
That. I've got that going
yeah,
for
yeah,
me.
Well, at least you're
slim.
Going for runs now, right?
Going right.
Yes, he has the run.
I'm going to try to go for. I'm going to try to go for a 12-minute run.
I bike
next
a lot.
Week.
I bike
yeah.
a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Me too. I've started biking. He kills
like
my
proper
hips.
Biking. Jimmy Brennan's a big biker, right?
Well, is he? Okay.
At least he was last time.
He Hell's was. Angels.
No, like Lycra shorts and everything.
Yeah, I can see Jimmy doing that.
Yeah, no, it's biking. I mean, Ottawa. It's a great. It's all bikers there too. They have great paths and everything. And you had to be creative too during this pandemic. So that was the go-to thing.
You stayed trim by biking around.
Yeah,
biking. It's hard.
But running for me would be a bit too much. The impact on my knees and
these are your issues.
My Achilles. Like I had to deal with that my whole career. why am I going to bother to deal with it now?
Yeah, fair enough.
Do some low impact.
Low impact and...
Yeah.
My Achilles kill me every morning waking up, and I've never had problems with my
Achilles. Is your Achilles heel?
It's my Achilles heel. Burning, like burning. And I've never had problems with my Achilles.
Oh, well, again, like most of us, everything hurts all the time. I just figure that's just normal.
What's burning you at the moment, Shams?
My belly, my gut. Yeah, I know.
VAR, by the way.
We haven't got time to discuss VAR. Oh, it's not VAR. It's the handball rules.
Oh, my God. It's gone.
Oh, the handball, where? What do you mean?
Well, there's been a whole bunch of them.
This weekend in England.
Did you see the one with Dyer yesterday?
No, I didn't see it. No, but I've seen some.
It was a header. He's challenging for the header in front of the... And the header's come down when he's... And hit his arm here, and he's not even looking. He's challenging like that. And the guy behind him heads it, hits his arm, goes to VAR, and it's like, well, he has no idea that hit him.
But it's an unnatural silhouette. Yeah. You know, the rule
like,
where it is.
Like, unnatural.
Yeah.
It's so strange to me because we've had our gripes with VAR for the last year or so, where how long it's been in for. And
it's more the rule, I think.
Yeah, it's like they're actually punishing the unavoidable now. Where, as you said, the Dyer thing, he's not even looking at the ball.
Yeah.
How are you meant to elevate yourself with your hands by your side like a pencil? Yeah.
Well, you know, it's amazing. Steve Bruce, who the Newcastle manager who benefited from that call this weekend, came out post-match and goes, you know, it's ridiculous, this rule, and it is hurting our game. So he benefited from it, and he's hammering the rule. Mm-hmm. So it is
like,
what it is.
Like Roy Hodgson said, if it's an intentional handball,
that was a bad one as well.
If it's not, then the old
You know what? We've been arguing handball rules for years now. Every year they play around with the rule a little bit, and it's never right. It never used to be wrong, I don't think. Was it? I don't remember.
It wasn't as bad.
No, it wasn't, right?
Yeah, no.
I don't know. Listen, we're out of time. We've got to go. Jules, thanks so much, mate.
Thanks, Jules.
Thanks, guys.
That was really fun. Yeah. Pretty good luck with Barry.
Thank you.
And you're welcome back anytime.
Awesome. Yeah, appreciate it.
Good chat, boys. All right, everyone. This has been Footy Prime. My thanks to Amsterdam Brewery, to DeanBlundell.com. We're back, same time, same place, next week, which will be, assuming we get this far,
our
1 year anniversary. Ooh, we made it this far, boys.
Congratulations.
And we're going live, apparently, I'm being told now. Are we really?
Stream it.
On where? On Facebook or on Insta?
Twitter, Instagram. At least Facebook, but we're going to get it.
Oh, yeah?
100%.
All right.
Good stuff, guys.
All right, cool. All right, see you then, boys. Bye.
What up, Primers? JC here. Can't get enough of Footy Prime, the podcast? Why not head over to Footy Prime's YouTube? Head to youtube.com/FootyPrime for exclusive video content. Then make your way over to wearefootyprime.com for all things Footy Prime, including our official gear from Admiral and our One Ball Gin from Nickel 9 Distillery. And make sure to follow and subscribe across all platforms, from Twitter to Instagram to Facebook to TikTok. Footy Prime has got you covered for all things footy. Thanks so much for listening, and back to the show. Oh.